morning.
Good morning, sir. Before we get started, may we have your name, sir? Good morning, sir. Before we get started, may we have your name, sir?
Anthony Bogle.
Okay, Mr. Bogle, the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis will be conducting your hearing, so if you could just hold on for one moment, and we will begin the process, sir.
There's a telephone.
And that's who she sees right well. And I need to make one phone call.
Is this for Ms. Wilson?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Curtis?
Hello?
Yes, may I speak with Ms. Wilson, please?
No, wait a second.
You are?
This is the Arizona Board of Executive Committee. It's our understanding that you wish to participate in the hearing for Mr. Bogle this morning. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
Okay, if you hold on very shortly, the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis will be conducting the hearing, and he will call on you at the appropriate time.
All right.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Ms. Curtis, will you be speaking before the board today?
For my son, yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. No, ma'am, I'm talking to a different individual, and that's Ms. Wilson on the telephone.
Yes, you do.
Okay, ma'am. I will be starting the hearing shortly. When it's time for the inmates' representatives to speak, you'll have a chance to speak to the board. Okay, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay, just give me a moment. Mr. Bogle, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Well, good morning. Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
It's Anthony Vincent Bogle, also known as Tony, 98687.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412B. Parole hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on the teleconference screen, sitting here on the bench, beginning at my extreme left is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. After him is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. White. My name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for this hearing. And to my right is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. I'll begin the hearing with the following summary. Mr. Anthony Bogle is 53 years old. He was certified eligible by the Arizona Department of Corrections for 31412B parole to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Pardon me, I didn't have the microphone on. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can.
Pardon me. He is currently serving a life prison sentence for first-degree murder, pending a 2.5-year consecutive sentence for theft. Said crimes occurred on about November 4th, 1991. He was approximately 27 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was convicted by jury trial and sentenced on June 23rd, 1993. Bogle has a criminal history dating back to 1986, including out-of-state charges such as assault on a police officer, false identification to a peace officer, burglary, and escape. It should be noted that Mr. Bogle's current conviction represents an escalation in violent crime. According to ADC time computation, he has been parole eligible since August 12, 2017. I will now read a brief summary of the offense in question. On November 4, 1991, the 49-year-old male victim's body was discovered in the closet in his apartment in Tucson by a maintenance man. An autopsy revealed death was due to blunt force trauma with asphyxia. Detectives assigned to the homicide learned a man and a woman had been living with the victim. A search of the victim's apartment revealed paperwork identifying the defendants, Tony Bogle and Paul Bogle. The Bogles were traced to Reno, Nevada. Paul Bogle was arrested on November 14, 1991. She gave a statement to police admitting that she and her husband sold the entertainment center. She also admitted being present in the victim's apartment when her husband killed the victim. She said she did not witness the homicide but heard the arguing. Then she helped her husband clean up the victim's blood. Afterward, they climbed out the window and fled. And that's just a short version of the case. Mr. Bogle has completed moderate programming in ADC, including completion of his GED. Although this hearing is to consider parole to his next sentence, he has a release plan that includes living with his mother and working for his uncle's home painting business. He has a considerable history of discipline in ADC from 1994 to 2016, with his last major on August 27, 2014 for theft. This is his second hearing before the board. He has submitted numerous certificates and personal statements. He has no letters to support his parole packet, but he does have one supporter in the room and one supporter on the telephone. Mr. Bogle, we have new board members since your last parole hearing, which I believe was your first parole hearing. This is an opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crimes that led to your incarceration?
I'm not in denial. I am responsible for that man's death. I didn't go in there to kill him. That wasn't my intention. It's just, I was just wired to defend myself. I've been in trouble all my life, like you said. And he was pretty strong. He was pretty mean. And I just gave it all I got. And I hit him in the head with a rock. And that was, he died. I didn't do it for money. I didn't do it out of hate. I don't really know what to say about it except for that man was an accident, and I didn't go out of my way to kill somebody. Neither did my wife. My wife was not involved in it. As a matter of fact, man, it scared her real bad. She shouldn't have even gone to prison for it.
Thank you, Mr. Bogle, and thank you for being so candid with the board. I see that you've had some programming inside the correction system.
Yeah, I stopped getting in trouble somewhere in 1999. I declined getting in trouble. Like you said, man, I had a criminal history, just declined and escalated. And then one day I snapped and just didn't want to get in more trouble. I think it was around 1999, 2000. I was a little clumsy and awkward at first, but I picked up some pace, and I don't like getting in trouble anymore.
Well, according to our record, and I'm going by Ames, so I have to take that information in good faith. Again, it's provided to us by the Department of Corrections. I stated that your last major was actually in 2014, and it looks like that you have had discipline inside DOC continuing from 2001 to 2014. If you have improved your behavior inside the correction system that is meaningful, that's certainly something to be taken into consideration. But it looks like you have had some discipline issues. Can you talk about that in these last...
The prison system is a very complicated world. Sometimes not what you read, your write-up, is not what it seems to be. And I'll give you an example. Sometimes a TV is very expensive. If somebody loans a TV to government gives it to me, no matter what, if an officer finds it and that officer decides to throw the book at you, you're going to get run up for theft because it's not your TV, you didn't purchase it. And it happens all the time. It's a trade in margarine. I'm an artist, and if I try to sell a greeting card, a Christmas card, I can get in trouble for that. I can get rolled up for trading in margarine. It's not that, man. I go out of my way to be evil and get into disciplinary trouble. It seems that can bind anybody in prison. I didn't have a fit. I didn't get worse. I just accepted it. Lived it, just went on. And escape? I've never tried to escape from here. They probably, if I remember right, they found some National Geographics and they had maps in it. And those aren't illegal. And they woke me up. They just called it escape. But I have never ever tried to escape. Now, I don't think that you can escape from here unless you get real lucky. And at this point, that would be pretty stupid for me to try. I've did over a quarter of a century here, and I'm too old for that. I'm done. If there's any other disciplinary that is inflammatory to you, let me know what it is, and I will do my best to explain it, whatever it is. But the theft, I didn't steal the TV. Sometimes they'll even write you up if you have extra food. They'll call it theft. They have to do it that way. They have to call it theft. Even though some of the officers believe that it shouldn't be called theft, they have to write it up like that. I have some food in my pocket, an extra orange that I walk out of the kitchen with. An officer may not be in the mood, and he can write you up for that. Walking out of the kitchen, the dining room, with an orange. Even though it's yours, you just can't walk out of the dining room with it. It's not that, man, the person is being evil or rude. It's prison life is just a complicated place. And write-ups is natural. If those things are going to happen, and recently the officers have had a little bit of compassion for me, because I make mistakes. No matter what, every day I make mistakes. They can write me up every day for something. Not having my shirt tucked in. Everything. But they have compassion for me. They know that I'm not doing it on purpose, being rude to the officer, mocking this authority. And a lot of the officers may want to see me go home. I don't think, man, that I'll ever come back to prison again. There's too many people out there that have compassion. Too many people out there that are eager to help. And all you gotta do is just be humble and ask. You know, not everybody's gonna want me to help you, but for the most part, America, man, has changed. There's much more opportunity out there. You know, when I grew up in the 70s and in the 80s, it was a little more difficult. And I didn't have a very good father. But it's clarity. I know what's up now.
Well, sir, if I may interrupt, I know that's a word you wrote in very large capitals is clarity. Have you also gone through some sort of spiritual journey since you've been inside the correction system?
Yeah, a lot of people do. They just don't talk about it. You can't prove it. It's just for you. You have a spiritual encounter or something like that. It was just meant for you. Because a lot of people go around saying, I saw a ghost, or Jesus came to my cell last night. It sounds a little silly. But yes, I now know that there is a God. And no matter what happens to me, Even if I have to die in this prison, I'm going to heaven. Because now I know it exists. And it's hard to explain, but, you know, there's some, it's, you know, God wants you to respect your neighbor the way you want to be respected. And love God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. And you'll live forever.
Sir, I know this is a different question, but it would seem that the original offense included your wife. Is she still your wife?
I think so. I'm not sure. There hasn't really been anything official that, because I have looked. A lot of people have looked for me, because recently in the last 2 years, everybody's been getting curious. Because they want me to be with somebody that I'm compatible with. I don't think I'll ever be with Paul Bobo again. I love her. I care for her. But I don't got anything official saying that I'm divorced from her. And she's all... In this world, then you get a lot of people, most people go to Facebook. And she is Paul Bobo. And that kind of makes me feel good, you know. Maybe she still loves me, you know, cares for me.
So was she also arrested when you were arrested? And did she do time in the correction system as well?
Unfortunately, yes. She did.
That's just to help me understand the case. I appreciate it. You attached various notes and statements in the parole packet. And you have quite a few pictures here with like notes written around it. You talked about being an artist as well. I guess I'm just kind of curious as to this style of communication, because it is a little random.
Well, I could have done better, you know. It's just, it's an act of desperation. You know, I'm being judged by God right now. You guys are God. You know, this is judgment day. And I'm looking for atonement. And I said, those little things right there, for example, I sent you a picture of a young man. He's very angry. And then I show you a picture of an older man. And he's quieter. You know, you guys, man, you spent a lot of money on me. You've given me skills. You've taught me a lot through education. And if I'm here, if I'm here like in 5 or 6 more years from now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to use these tools and these wonderful things, man, that Arizona has provided for me. I learned a lot about construction. I went to Pima Community College. I got involved with the Rio College. I learned a lot. And it's just because I can't just use them out there without getting a little trouble, there's going to be people out there that's going to understand me. Because I can tell them, look, I've done a lot of time in prison. Will you be patient with me? Will you help me? Will you try to save me from coming back to prison? And there's a lot of people out there that will touch their hearts. I know it because it has me. Somebody comes to me and they really want help. I help them. And because they're humble. And there ain't nobody out there that's going to just turn me down and just kick me in the head. There's people out there that will give you a car. There's people out there that will, before I get in trouble or before I get hungry, there's people out there that will make sure I got something in my belly. You don't have to do a crime. When I see a lot of these youngsters come back to prison for parole violation and their excuses, it's hard out there, it kind of rubs me wrong. Because I know that there's just, that's just an excuse. You don't have to come back to this prison because it's hard out there. They're being hard on themselves. Because there's a lot of help out in America now. And it's getting better. Getting rid of all that hate, getting rid of all the discrimination, and there's so many programs. You can have anything you want in this country if you're patient and you're humble, and you can get it righteously. You don't have to steal it. I sit in this prison and I see so many little things, and the world sometimes can make me angry. See things may that happen to little children, women, wars, or stuff like that.
Sir, if I may ask you, have you sought any counseling or treatment since you've been inside the prison system?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that.
I do. It was a nice lady. She worked with me for a few years. I volunteered because one of the officers told me that it would be in my best interest. And I asked the officer, I said, well, how is it going to help me to get mental treatment? He said, look, Logo, you will learn some things in there that you did not know. And he was right. It's a woman. I spent 2 years with her. I saw her like every 3 weeks. And last month was the last time I saw her. She said, Mr. Bowman, I think you're healed. And I said, are you really? She said, yes. I don't want you to be SMI anymore. I'm lowering your mental health score to the lowest that it can get, because I think that, man, you're doing fine. I said, well, do you think that I would make it in the real world? She goes, absolutely. And that was last month. So I spent about 2 years with her, and I learned a lot. And there's a lot of things, man, that she taught me. So whenever things get rough and it looks like the whole world is caving in on you and you're feeling cornered, no matter what, you're going to be all right. You just got to hang in there. Going out and stealing, and that's an excuse. You don't have to go out and steal to feed yourself, to have a full belly. And I got plenty of family out there that want to make me fat.
Thank you, sir. So I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you before we talk to your supporters. So, fellow board members, yes, Mr. Johnson.
Sir, I just have a question for you. Now, looking at your Ames report, there's a ticket that you received that was a minor in November 15th of 2016 for promoting prison contraband. Can you tell me what that's about?
Yes. We had food visits here, and it's just a sea of people. And I grew up enjoying magic tricks. So I was in the visitation room, and these kids gathered around me, and I made a bag disappear. The officer said, how did you do that? And I showed him how I did it. It was a little plastic thumb. I stuffed the put the plastic, a candy wrapper, in the plastic thumb. I made it, and they didn't see it. So I don't know why they would call it promoting prison contraband, but they dropped the ticket. It was dismissed because the captain said, don't do no more magic shows out there in the visitation room. And I felt lucky that ticket was dropped, because they could have been just really blew it out of proportion.
Okay,
but that's
sir.
What that was about.
Okay.
I think it was the little plastic thumb that I made.
Mm-hmm. Thank you,
I made all kinds of magic tricks, and then the gadgets, hell, leave it alone, because the little gadgets, the little secret pockets and stuff like that can make an officer nervous.
Okay, Mr. Bowe, I'm not sure if that's the what it was, but it doesn't say that it was dismissed on here. It says that it was guilty and it was a minor violation.
Do you know what it was? I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you. I don't remember what it was. Promoting prison contraband.
Yes.
It had something to do with the visitation room, right?
I don't know. It just shows it on here as a violation, sir. You don't recall that?
Yes, I do. And the year, you said it was 2016?
Yes, sir.
They dropped it down to a minor and they told me, do not do that again. It was a little plastic thumb that I was hiding stuff in.
Okay. I just thought you said it was dismissed, but it was. You said they dropped it down to a minor. It does show there's a minor violation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sir.
I didn't bring any drugs or guns in. I don't do that.
I understand.
I have no use for it.
Mr. Bogle,
yes.
One more question that I had to do, and it has to do with the time that this incident occurred. You said that it was an accident, but you didn't say why. You did kind of say you was defending yourself, but what happened? What caused you to strike him? What was going on?
Well, have you seen this from 59, 60-year-old tough guys? There's a lot of them, but he was 49, and he was mean. I grew up in juvenile. I grew up in prison environment situations. I never really fought for myself. I just took whatever came. While in the prison, I kind of got, PTS, post-traumatic syndrome, whatever. I'm not making no excuse. The guy had been threatening me and my wife for quite some time, and we didn't have too many places to go, because he was also kind. And he didn't offer me a lot of work. But one night, he really, really let me have it.
What do you mean he really let you have it, sir? I'm trying to understand what happened.
He elbowed me in the jaw. It hurt pretty bad, and I landed on his table. I got up, and we went at it. And I'm young, and my wife is there. She's in the next room. He knocks me down again. That man was, he was a fighter. I just reached down on the ground and grabbed his rock and I swung as hard as I could to make it stop.
So Mr. Bogle, let me interrupt you, sir. What started the altercation between you and the victim?
Have you ever been that person that was very, very verbally combative? I've lived with it all my life, but that's all he did. That's all he did was just attack me and my wife, called us names, and told her to get into the kitchen and cook. That don't mean he has to die. That didn't make me want to kill him. I never ever considered I'm going to kill this guy. No, it just happened.
Okay.
He was just really mean, always been challenging me. And he was always grabbing my wife's hair whenever I was at work. And she would tell me, Tony, we got to get out of here. I'm not staying here no more. He pulled my hair and held me down. I'm wired differently back then. And I think that you guys understand that. You look back, man, and you say, wow, what was I thinking? I could have done better than that.
Okay, Mr. Bogle. Okay. Thank you.
He was just mean.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other questions from fellow board members? Yes, Dr. Wright.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Let me just ask a few questions, just for clarification, Mr. Bogle. One is, the first one is, and maybe you already explained this one, but I just missed it. Now, what was your relationship with the victim? I mean, aside from y'all living in the same apartment, but what was your relationship? Were you friends? Why were three of you living together, two men and a female? Why were y'all living together, sir?
Because I just wanted a roof over my head, and he provided it. And he had a nice house, and he said, you can hang out. I didn't have nowhere to go, but I had a job. And he's the one that made sure that I had work. He liked to sneak some little booze, and he would get out of here. But my relationship with him was, we were work partners, and we did become friendly. We weren't compatible.
So you met him on the job, is that what you're telling the board, sir?
Yes.
Okay. And so he invited you to reside in his residence, and so that's how you ended up residing there, sir?
He told me, he says, motels are very expensive, because that's what we did. We lived in a motel every night on Benson Avenue in Tucson. He said, you guys don't have to do that. Come over to my house, just play chess with me, play some cards, and we'll go and work together every day.
How long had you been in Tucson? Had you been living in Tucson for a while? Why were you in Tucson, sir?
At the time, I had relatives that live here, and they still do. I've got quite a few relatives here. And I thought that if I'm ever in trouble, I will go to them. I mean, I'll have some type of security that I can run to in an emergency. That's the reason why I came here. And not only that, my mother told me that there's a lot of work here. Landscaping, painting houses, construction, and there was. We made some phone calls, and it was already set up for me to work. My first day in Tucson, I went to work. I painted a retirement center up in Cottonwood.
So where did you come from? You came from Cottonwood. Where were you from before you went to Tucson?
I'm from Oregon.
Oh, you from Oregon?
I came from Washington at that time. I went straight to Tucson from the state of Washington, the Tri-Cities.
Okay. So that's up there near Yakima and that part of Washington.
Yes. And I came here originally to work. Okay. Because I do love to work. I'm a workaholic. You give me a job and... Yeah, I'll be there every day.
And may I just ask you another question, sir? And that is, you, and I'm just trying to get to know you as one board member, although I met you before, the last time you came before the board, but you refer to the victim as the man, or as a man. Who was the victim? What was his name?
His name was Joe Brennan.
Why didn't you refer to him by name? Why did you refer to him just as the man or a man?
I may have not have articulated it right, and if it was offensive, I didn't mean it that way. I don't know.
Okay. I was just curious.
There was nothing mean in there.
I'm not suggesting that you meant it negatively, but sometimes, you know, we just like to make sure that you knew who the victim was by name, and so that's the way
we are.
Yes, sir.
Just saying the name is sad to me. I don't like to say his name because it's sad. If somebody had gotten into a fight with my little brother and got a little carried away and killed him.
Okay.
That right there would stay with me for the rest of my life.
I understand, sir.
I'm not in denial. I understand.
Yes, sir.
The victims, my family, I understand y'all, your job. But I'm done. I can't prove that to you. I'm not going to just say, if you send me home and say, get busy, get a life, live. I'm going to do it. I will, if my parole officer says, get here in the morning, I'm going to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning. I've been on parole quite a few times, and I really didn't understand it. I thought it was unnecessary. Leave me alone. You know, I would just run to my mom without reporting. I thought, man, that they were just harassing me. But I understand what parole is about.
Okay. Let me just ask another question, Mr. Bogle. Where did this incident took place? Was that in the house or outside? When did it actually happen, the offense?
It was in the house. His friends would come over a lot. That's where it started. It started in his living room.
I'm going to tell you the reason I asked that, and you've already guessed why I ask it, because you indicated that you hit him with a rock. So what was a rock doing in the house?
He had a little pet rock that had little eyes that he glued on it. And he would use it to keep the door open during the summer and stuff. I always knew it was there. He shoved me so hard that it knocked the wind out of me. Whenever I go on the floor, I look for anything, man, that would be equal power. And I grabbed that rock by his door, and I swung as hard as I could. He didn't die immediately. He couldn't breathe. For some reason, he couldn't breathe. And my wife came in there and said, we got to get him to the hospital. And I said, he'll be okay. He's staring at us. He'll be okay. That was wrong. Today, I would panic. I'd put him in a car and drive him to the hospital. I just didn't understand a lot back then. I had a lot of fears. I was an arrogant young man.
Let me just ask you one other question, sir, so that we can move on with time management. I guess my final question, I have two or three other, I'm just going to ask one final question, and that is, as it relates to your, after the incident took place itself, after the offense, you and your wife went to Nevada, I believe, Reno or somewhere. Why did you go to Nevada? Why did you end up, with the two of you end up going there rather than somewhere else, sir?
I tried to call a patrol officer, and I really did do that. I talked to him right after, immediately, like maybe 15 minutes, an hour after he died. I called my patrol officer, and my wife said, wait a minute, tell him you'll call him back in a minute. You need to talk about this. We discussed it, being young, bad reflexes, we decided that no matter what, they were going to scalp us. And we took off to Nevada because my little brother was there and he offered me a job there. As soon as I got there, I helped build and paint these apartment complexes. That's the reason why I went to Nevada. And trying to run and hide from what I had just done. There was no way I was going to get away with it.
Okay, I understand that. Let me just ask this other question, and this will be my last one. You said you was on parole, or you had a parole officer. What were you on parole for, sir?
I was on parole for, it was a parole violation. I was on parole for a probation violation. They put me in the back of a police car. I kicked the window out of hangers, and man, I'm tired of this, and kicked the window. He said it was over $100-something in damage. That's what that was about.
Okay, sir.
I shouldn't have kicked the window.
I do understand it. Thank you so very much, and a pleasure speaking with you, sir. And thank you so very much,
sir.
Mr. Lee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Mr. Rumble, you mentioned you have a lot of family or a lot of relatives or support here in Arizona. Who else do you have in Arizona?
I got a great uncle here, Dave Wilson. He's worked all his life. He's in retirement right now. I've got Mrs. Wilson, who is my aunt. That's my mom's sister. She's been with me. While I've done this time in prison, she's been with me. She's supported. And she's always reminded me that she would never, ever let me down. If I make it, if I get an education, if I go to college while here, then she will have more faith in me. I think she's on the phone.
She is.
Mm-hmm. But I don't ask them, I don't want very much. I'm not going to ask them for too much. But they will give me enough. And they've always been there for me, always. And they're the ones that helped me. Somewhere in 1999, they made it clear that we're going to help you the rest of the way. And stop getting write-ups. There's hope. You're going to make it. You're not going to die in prison. And I thought I was. I thought this was that. And so in 1999, they gave me hope. Said, you got a few more years left. I guarantee you, you'll make it. Right. And I have. I've made it this far. And Mrs. Wilson then has helped me, you know, even before prison, and she's helped me. Right. I just didn't know how to appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Bogle. Thank you, Mr. Bogle.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Any further questions from fellow board members? Okay, Mr. Bogle, we're going to continue with taking testimony from your supporters. So I will begin with Ms. Curtis. Ms. Curtis, are you able to approach the podium to speak? Yes, if you could, please approach the podium. And if you can state your name for the record.
My name is Catherine Curtis.
And what would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
Well, I know that 27 years ago was a long time. And he was a young boy. And he's never really had that chance to make himself be who a person, you know. Because he hasn't got to be out in society very long. But he put himself in prison. He's a straight A student. And that was the only way that he could do college. They give him a scholarship. And he graduated. And the accident with Joseph Brenner, I spoke with him quite a few times. And he did have problems, issues. And the people around the apartment, he lived in an apartment. He was on a pass, Joseph Brennan. And he was kind of hard to get along with. But there is, you know, Tony don't remember a lot of things that went on. Now, his wife even confessed about what, you know, her part in it. And she said that she did hit him many times because he was trying to molest her. And that took place, okay? He died. But he had brain seizures. He had already some kind of brain. I don't know if he was in a fight or he was in maybe a car accident. But he just did, they took and separated them, the wife and the husband, and trialed them in different times. And like the theft charge, that was dismissed. My son was never charged for theft. It was his wife. And that's what a warrant was made up for Paula to be picked up in Reno. I've opened up this case. I've been on it for a year. And you know, it's a battle. My son does not blame anybody for any of this. You know, he takes responsibility. But I want it to be fair and to be understood correctly. You've got to go through that whole case. And it was a criminal actions all through it. And my son was never trialed right. I didn't even get to be called up for a witness. The DA wouldn't even bring witness. He said, well, it cost too much. So I didn't have any witnesses in. But all the police reports tells you that that man was found, Mr. Brenner, by the neighbors. And they went in there and they took things out of there, not knowing that they belonged to my son. And Paula did not know that they belonged. It shows and tells you clearly that these two women asked Tony and Paula, would you help us move it? And the main thing is how it was done, how the case was done. They trialed her for involuntary manslaughter. because she admitted that she had hit him several times. And that with him having epilepsy and he had seizures, that it says in the biopsy or autopsy, medical, there was three or four that looked him over. And only one showed up as a witness. And that was the DA's one he picked. And it says in medical that having seizures, that it just takes him to even fall and go into a seizure. And that's a possibility that that's how he died. These things was never brought up to show the true thing that happened. It was just fixed where my son was charged for murder. And there was no warrants for murder. The judge, when they brought them in on a warrant, my son volunteered and went. He said he was not going to leave his wife, take her on. No, he went voluntarily. The warrants that these detectives, they didn't even have a warrant. They called Washoe County in Reno. Will you please call Tucson to write us a warrant, okay? This was all to do with that. Paula Bogo. My son was never served with anything to do with that.
Ma'am, thank you for such a detailed statement before the board. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you at this point. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for such a detailed statement. We also have on the phone Ms. Bertha Wilson. Ms. Wilson, can you hear me?
Yes.
Would you state your name for the record?
Bertha Wilson.
And what would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
I would like to address the board in regards to Tony Vogel.
Yes, ma'am.
I know the past is the past and the future is our future. And I'm here to represent Tony, my nephew. I want you to look at him in a different light than other people are looking at it today. He is a different man today than he was yesterday. And I would like to see him have the opportunity to live his life according to what he has become today. And that I am willing to give him the emotional and physical, I'm trying to find the right word for this, support in counseling. If it so comes up that he needs to be guided into the future. I don't have anything to say about the past. I just believe in the future, and I believe that Tony just came to that level that he could do something worthy with his life now. I have to thank you for allowing me to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you.
Yes.
We have no questions from our fellow board members. Again, there's five voting members on the panel today. Thank you for your time. If you'll just remain on the phone, we'll continue with the hearing. Okay, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Bogle, back to you. We're getting close to the end of our hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make before the board, before we go into discussion? Let me ask you, you don't repeat yourself in the interest of time management.
Okay.
You have provided quite a bit of information to us, and we appreciate it. Also, we appreciate that you've been very pleasant with the board.
Okay.
This is your hearing, so is there anything else you would like to share before the board goes into discussion?
Now, it may not be relevant, but now, I've always wanted to make it clear. The prosecutor, Kim Beasley, who prosecuted me, What my mom was trying to say is that there were some pretty strange things, some illegal things going on in the courtroom. We didn't really know how to fight that. I was also offered a plea bargain, and somehow it just disappears. But right after I'm eventually sentenced to prison, the feds went in and indicted him, which wasn't really a surprise. It traumatized me. They indicted him for setting up illegal evidence, setting up jury and stuff like that. And it was Ken Beasley. And what he was trying to do was get first-degree murder verdicts. And he had political ambitions. And that really didn't happen. I should have followed Rule 32. It's just at the time, because I probably would have been gotten a lower sentence. I don't think that meant I should be honorated. But first degree murder, I thought, man, was unfair. And he wanted that. But he was indicted, man, for setting up a lot of false witnesses and stuff like that. Have you heard Ken Beasley, prosecutor from Tucson?
I have to be honest with you, sir. I worked in Tucson for several years, and I do remember his name, but that's where it ends. I am going to be curious about his history after this hearing is over.
Okay. I'm not saying that, man, he had it in for me. He was doing this to just about anybody. But not only that, the judge had said during the sentence, this jury, this courtroom has not proven to me that this was an evil, vicious crime. That judge at the sentencing said, this was not, he did not suffer. This is not monetary. And I doubt it if Mr. Bogle would do something like this again. He said it's non-repetitive. Whatever that, you know, with all due respect, I understand, you know, that the victim, Joe Brennan, you know, he deserves death justice. But I think that there was a lot of injustices there in the court, man, for me, too. I mean, to find justice for Joe, that's fair. But they overdid it with me because I didn't go out of my way to viciously kill that man. I didn't peep in the window, stop him, say, hey, let's go kill somebody. And I've met a lot of people right here in prison that were worse than Joe, and I was in the cellies.
With respect to your due process, I'm going to ask you to sum it up, because we're not here to retry the case.
Okay, all right, you're right. Yeah, I told my mom the same thing. I'm sorry.
Is there anything else, sir?
I got my fingers crossed. I will come back, and I'll make you proud of you.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our individual votes and make a decision regarding your parole. So if you'll just remain on the phone, you'll be able to hear the discussion, and again, we'll come back to you shortly with a decision. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I think I'd like to state, just because Mr. Bogle said some, and again, it didn't offend me, I just want to make sure that we're clear on this with Mr. Bogle, that the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency is a quasi-judicial body made up of citizens. We're not God. We represent the people of Arizona, and we have to make some tough decisions. We vote individually. We vote independently. And we operate under an open meeting law. I'll begin the discussion by saying that I like Mr. Bogle's attitude. He's got a positive, determined attitude. He was pleasant with the board. and I commend him for his programming inside the Department of Corrections, in particular his the completion of his GED. But, and I think this is where it gets challenging, but this is where I'll begin the discussion. Due to the serious and violent nature of the crime, I'm concerned that paroling Mr. Bogle to his next sentence could be an undue risk to public safety, in as much that the incident offense represents a steady escalation of violent behavior in his past. It's apparent. And that we need more time to monitor his rehabilitation and personal development. But again, that's where I'd like to begin the discussion. And I'm open to the collective wisdom of my fellow board members. Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson.
I think Mr. Bogle is kind of, I'm going to tell you that I just have, I'm not quite understanding what caused him to strike the gentleman with the brick. I mean, he's told some different stories. He's, sometimes he says he came in and saw him pulling his wife's hair, according to the report. Statement to the police, his wife said he was trying to rape her. But I don't know what triggered the violence, other than his statement that he's saying that this was just the victim was a violent guy, or he was a big guy. He was, he described it a different way. So I'm just not comfortable with trying to understand, you know, why he did it and what triggered it and what caused him to be, you know, that angry, to strike somebody in the head with a brick, what triggered that reaction. So I'm just not comfortable at this time with his statement and his statements that pre-sentence report are altogether different than what he's saying. I think he said today that he came in and I'm not quite sure what his reason was for actually doing it. I just didn't get a good understanding of that.
Before we continue the discussion, I want to say in the open meeting setting, I think there are some cases where it's hard to find the language, and that's a note I took for myself. But like you, I am uncomfortable. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
I do very much appreciate, though, the way Mr. Vogel described how he had worked with a therapist, and that about, I think he said about 1999, he kind of, something clicked in his head, and he decided, I'm done with the criminal way of life. And I believe him. I believe that he is done with it. And I appreciate that he stuck with the therapist, and the therapist just said to him, I think you figured it out. So I think he's developing a good solid foundation for a life that's not going to involve crime. But I'm with you. I would just like to have a little more structure, a little more time to go by. There's also, and I failed to ask him, there's also a matter of restitution that I didn't ask him, but it sounds like he's willing to work and has a good work ethic and would easily take care of that. But I'm also with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Neal?
I'm with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Wright.
I think that, it's for the board to make the decision to move him to his next consecutive sentences, we're going to have to be very certain as much as possible, as much as humanly possible, that he's ready, because as we all know, based on information that's been presented to the board, once he's passed, he only has 2.5 years. And that's may sound like a long time, but that's a very short period of time. And like our other colleagues, I think that there needs to be a little more time before we can be sure to make that decision on behalf of the citizens of Arizona. Therefore, at this time, like my other colleagues, I'm not in favor at this time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. And thank you, all of my fellow board members. I think we've had very good deliberation. I'm going to go ahead and make my motion, and that is, and I will read it in totality, or in total, pardon me, before I ask you for your final votes, but to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence with a 1-year set off. Just 1 second. And my reasons are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, violated previous probation and parole, history of assaultive behavior, prior criminal history, repeat offender, poor institutional behavior, in as much that we do have discipline from 94 all the way to 2016, even though some were minors, we still have as last major in 2014. Recent disciplinary infraction. I do believe he has a release plan. He had very good demeanor during this hearing, and I want that noted. And I do appreciate that he has family support. Is there anything else that anyone would like to mention?
I would.
No, ma'am, it's for the board. Therefore, again, my motion is to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I'm asking for a 1-year set off. Reasons for serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, violated previous probation or parole, history of assaultive behavior, prior criminal history, repeat offender, poor institutional behavior, and recent disciplinary infraction, and that is my motion.
Second.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. Agree.
Okay, Mr. Bogle, the board has made its decision to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. We ask that you do not take this as a negative. We listened to your story intently, your journey, your development, and where you're at in your rehabilitation progress.
Yes, sir.
Again, I think you heard all the reasons. Do you have any questions before we conclude this hearing?
No, it's fair. Do you have does anybody have any suggestions on what you think I should do? And when will I see you again?
Well, sir, we asked for a parole set off for 1 year, approximately 1 year. We can't give an exact date. That time computation will be handled by the Department of Corrections. We cannot give you direction as far as your development inside the Department of Corrections. We do recommend that you talk to your CO3. It sounds like you've done programming and counseling. I won't say that this is some sort of scale tipping behavior, but if that counseling is available to you, I would highly suggest you continue with that process, and we will continue to monitor your development.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This concludes our hearing.
Sir, would you put the CO3 back on?
Oh, you've been here.